This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
The Celtics running on empty, at least when it gets to the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
In both of these games so far. And so, in a little bit of a hole, and you can talk about that all day long here on Boston Sports Original, WEEI. If I could, quick, a little Odyssey appreciation for Joe, who works at PwC in the Seaport. And wasn't I just walking along, Curtis, yesterday afternoon getting some steps? And Joe came bounding out of PwC, loves the show. Joe and his dad both listen to the same radio show. So
I'm just, the old man was a partner at E&Y. We don't really love PwC, but we'll support them for that purpose.
You can do what Joe and his dad do and listen to this show every day on the Odyssey app. Download it, and then you can listen to us wherever you are, whenever you want, whatever time of the day or night. And also, Odyssey app is where you can leave us a Hill note whenever you feel like you are in the mood. So a voice note on any topic. Obviously, I think the Celtics and the loss last night will dominate Hill notes, but we will play the best ones back coming up at 9:20 on today's show. Shime, let's get right to it.
It's time for
Larry Bird's not walking through that door, fans.
They
don't let the Sox win this game.
Said it.
I'm just going to say, they want you to cook the dinner. At least they ought to let you shop for some of the groceries.
They said it on the Greg Hill Show.
I'm not talking about this.
Everybody got the message?
They said it is brought to you by Ketch's Law. They would love to honor those who built this city, so help them when you nominate your hero. Whether they build or drive or care for our city, just go to WeBuiltThisCity.com and get them the recognition that they deserve. That's WeBuiltThisCity.com. Where do you want to start, Shime?
Well, Greg, let's begin with Karl Anthony Towns. Had a pretty good game overall, I would say, especially compared to game one against the Celtics last night. And he was asked about going back to the Madison Square Garden, up two games to none. Karl Anthony Towns is not overlooking the Celtics here by any means.
What does it mean going back to the Garden up two zip?
It means we up two zip. I mean, but it doesn't really mean anything. You know, if anything has taught me experience from last year, we were up 2-0 the same way in both away games in Denver, and we came home and we left our home two games 2-2. So we can't take anything for granted. We got to find ourselves executing at a higher level. We can't keep doing these 20-point leads for Boston and hope to come back and win the game. We gotta play better. We gotta shoot better. We gotta execute better. We can't start having that kind of Knicks basketball being played down 20. We gotta start from the start the game that way and finish the game that way. 48 minutes.
Celtics have blown back-to-back 20-point leads. Embarrassing.
Yeah. Late in the third quarter, too.
You know what's the craziest thing about it? And I don't know if you guys shared this experience, but there's a point where I think it was one of the threes in the corners by Mikhail
Bridges,
where it made it a four-point lead for the Celtics. And I just was like, okay, they're losing. It's just like they can't stop the momentum. Yeah. Another job description of your head coach is to interrupt runs with timeouts, try to get your opponent out of rhythm, try to change what you're doing. And I watch it, and it's like they all – they're such a front-running team. The second they get punched back, they cower.
Do you still have this team beating the 86 team?
I do.
All right.
It's entirely to do with how athletic people are today versus how athletic they were then.
Yeah.
I mean, there wasn't a thing as like year-round training. They smoke cigarettes.
See, it's the basketball version of my Joe Montana take.
Right. Missoula has some of it to do, but even if you're calling timeouts and your team goes 15 straight field goals where they can't hit a shot, like, that's on the players. I mean, like, seriously, like, you know, whether it's a good look, an open look, like, you have to be able to. It almost seems like when a team starts to make a run to come back, they get ice cold and they get nervous. Talk about the booty holes getting tight. It's like every single one of them, when they start to see the Knicks making a comeback late in, whether it's the third, late in the third quarter into the fourth quarter, no one can throw the ball in the ocean. Like, to go 15 straight shots without hitting a field goal.
It's just, and maybe this is the mentality, it probably is, of the NBA player today, but they oftentimes have the ball in the paint, under the hoop, and rather than try to get the layup, try to draw the foul, they look to throw it back out for the three.
Yeah.
Like, and I get it. Like, everybody wants to shoot threes, and that's the way that I like
it. But it does.
It's complete old man take. I totally understand that. But
it's an old man take.
Well, you are old.
Well, Curtis, I don't look it.
No.
But Greg, I'm going to give you a little credit.
I thought you went to BU when we first met.
I had lunch with a potential partner for this radio show at the ladies at Express It yesterday.
Oh, here we go.
And
what the hell's Express It?
It's like a courier service. They will deliver anything. And both of them, we got into how old I was for what, and both of them thought I was in my late 40s, not anywhere near how old I was.
Okay, that's good.
They definitely weren't trying to butter you up at all.
It was unsolicited. I mean, out of the blue, they said it.
They said, I can't believe it.
But anyway, enough about me. What were you saying, Curtis? It is an old head take?
No, I was giving you credit for the old head take, because it is, but...
I feel like we're all better for knowing that, Greg. Thank you for sharing.
The difference is that might not be the way for you to win no more. Because if you're not making your threes, like they've shown that they haven't been able to do, and maybe they're coming back down to earth. Like, maybe this is who they are, and they were able to make them, and they're able to make them during the regular season, but they're not this type of team.
Yeah.
So you have to be able to don't pass up the easy layups. Just take those.
What's next, Sean?
Well, one of the biggest issues we had at the end of the game was Joe Mazzulla not calling a timeout there before the final play. Mazzulla talked about why he decided not to call a timeout before that final play.
Joe, what was the thought process with not calling timeout there with 12 seconds left?
Had one left, got a good look on the exact same play 20 seconds earlier, tried to execute the exact same thing. They did a better job of their lower pickup point, and we weren't able to get the advantage that we had on the last Tatum dunk. So good full court setting. They subbed out Towns, weren't able to sub out Brunson, had action there, and we just didn't execute.
Okay.
So I don't know
what
the plan
there was to run the exact same Tatum ISO play.
And so when you saw him get stopped at the three-point line, Joe, why didn't you realize, oh, things aren't going the same way?
Call a timeout there or whatever.
And you know what's shocking? If you run the exact same play, odds are they'll have a better shot at stopping it.
Well, Courtney was spot on earlier. The play before that he's talking about, basically the Knicks kind of laid down and let him do it so 100%. They could get the ball back.
Yeah, like, and the whole place erupts like he's this mecca.
Yeah, but then you cannot foul Jalen Brunson and put him at the line. That's how you get down. Like, if they're going to beat you, make them beating you, having to shoot a field goal, having to shoot a shot. Don't foul him. Then he goes to the line.
I also don't buy that from Missoula because those guys didn't – the rest of the guys on the floor didn't clear out like they did the play before.
No.
No, they
– Like, I don't buy that.
Not at
they
all.
They were all sitting there in the paint watching what was going on.
Yeah, I don't know. It was like somebody came – like, there was two guys. The Robinson guy was up – might have been up at the top of the key who was covering Al Horford.
Al Horford was right there in – If that was the play, mm-hmm. again, second time around, better than the first, Al Horford was standing right there at the foul line in the way.
Yeah.
And also,
the situation is entirely different. The Knicks have a one stop and they win the game. When Tatum had that dunk, it made the Celtics, I think it gave them a one-point lead with like 40 seconds left in the game.
No, when Tatum made that dunk, it gave the Celtics a one-point lead with about 18 seconds to go.
Okay. So
was it 20 seconds?
They got the ball with 10 seconds.
Yeah, because Jalen Brunson hit the two free throws.
Right, no, I know. Yeah. I know. So Tatum had the dunk.
Yep.
Knicks got fouled, hit both free throws, and then they peed down their leg and didn't call timeout.
Tatum had the dunk. I think they called the timeout, and then the Knicks... Ultimately,
called the timeout.
Yeah, and then Brunson gets fouled, and then that's when, you know, I think there might have been, I don't know how much time was on the clock when he started his drive, like 17 seconds.
This is Alex from New Hampshire. What's up, Alex?
Hey, good morning, guys. It's painful because you can't honestly tell me that the play was for Tatum to run the court, do nothing, run into three guys, and throw up some backward shot. Like, not a single screen was set for Tatum. So you gotta just call a timeout.
Yeah.
And then after the game, he's trying to sound like Bill Belichick, like, well, I looked over across the field and he didn't call a timeout, so I knew I kind of had him where I wanted him. Just call a timeout and set a screen for your star player.
And Wiggy, you're right. Yep. 18 seconds is what the Knicks got the ball with. So, but either way, in that situation, your defensive approach is different considering the limited amount of time you would have left should the Celtics score on the final possession of the game. And that excuse actually makes Missoula look worse, that you're admitting that you didn't even have another play to draw up in that spot, that you had to play the same ISO ball.
I mean, it was 24 seconds left. Tatum went down, scored the hoop.
Yep.
And then you end up with when he could have called the timeout at the second opportunity, mm-hmm. there was 12 seconds.
Yeah.
Left.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. As soon as Brunson made the free throw, you could have called the timeout.
And even if you wanted to wait till he got to half court, 7 seconds.
Yeah.
Plenty of time.
Yeah. You only need like 3 seconds, 2.5 seconds is enough time to, you know, get a really good look.
What's next, Shime?
They
got good looks all night, Wiggy.
Yeah.
Joe Mazzulla told you that. Great looks.
Just like the look I gave everybody yesterday when I told you to bet Tatum over 15.5 rebounds and assists. You're welcome for making you money. But one guy who was also very unhappy with Joe Mazzulla's use of timeouts would be the one and only Brian Scalabrine, who joins our WEEI afternoon program. Here was Scal after the game last night.
And by the way, we didn't use a timeout, and I'm not really into the timeout thing, but in the playoffs, I think it's a little bit different. We had a use it or lose it timeout with 3 minutes. So think about it. The Knicks are on this run. We have a use it or lose it timeout. We don't use it, and we lose it. We also go to the end with 12 seconds to go. We don't call a timeout. We don't get a great shot off of that. I'm like, in the regular season, you've got to be able to figure that out. But in the playoffs, right now, you can clearly see this team is fractured. They called a timeout before. Jason Tatum gets a wide open dunk. Now they go down there. Tatum turns the ball over. Maybe you got to use some of these to get this team going the right direction again.
Tatum, where's the poll at right now, Curtis?
Let's
more
see.
Missoula or more Tatum?
It's probably Missoula, I bet.
So 400 votes in now. 54% of the respondents put the game 2 loss on Joe Missoula. 41% on Tatum. 1% Jaylen Brown.
We're going to end up like the Oklahoma Thunder. the, and I'm not talking about the SGA Oklahoma Thunder. I'm talking about the Russell Westbrook, Kevin Durant era.
James Harden.
Yeah, when you had two superstars or you had three superstars, there was a kind of fracture in the way they felt, and then you end up losing both of them. Because there's no way that you're going to be able to retain both of them just based off the money situation. And then if you don't win...
Do you think that because Wick obviously wanted it to be Jason Tatum, that was the future, Jason is Wick's guy, do you think that Billy Chisholm, it could end up swaying towards Jaylen Brown staying and Jason Tatum leaving?
No, I think what will happen is like the basketball people will tell you that Tatum has more skills, so they'll obviously go with him unless Tatum says, I want out. You know, Tatum might go to them and go, you know what, I want out. If you think Jaylen's your guy, then... He can do it, and I want to go somewhere.
Well, who was the guy out of the two of them last night?
In the first half, it was Jaylen in the first half. Yeah, but you got to play two halves, Greg.
Yeah, but Jason Tatum didn't show up big in the second half either.
Let me ask this question, and I agree with you. But honestly, if Tatum had 17 in the first half and ended up with three in the second half, we'd be crushing him.
Agreed.
Right?
Yes.
So we got to do the same. Yep. And you can't tell me Jaylen Brown is the guy who should be here over Tatum and then only has three in the second half. Like, you can't have it both ways.
No, you're right.
And I agree. Tatum can't play the way he played all game.
Okay. Yep. And just because I need to keep asking, whether it's DMs, not my DMs, my Instagram DMs or text messages or calls, you still think Joe Mazzulla is the best coach in the NBA?
He's not the best coach in the NBA right now.
Okay. All right.
And when we're talking about the playoffs, no, he's not even close.
Progress. We're making progress with you. All right, that's They Said It. Quick back and forth on what they said yesterday in sports. And we will get to Courtney in today's news coming up, including Florida Not Like the Rest of Us, and why a woman committed assault with nachos on her unsuspecting wife. That is coming up next.
Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Want to travel like a savvy jet setter? No, that doesn't mean monogramming your passport. It means making smart decisions every step of your trip, which means knowing your options. Smart Travel unpacks the facts, like which booking sites actually save money, how to fly first class using points, and if that fancy travel card is a smart investment, all so you can save more on your next adventure. Follow Smart Travel from NerdWallet today and start traveling like a pro.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
I'm Emma Grade, and I've spent the last 20 years building, running, and investing in some incredible businesses. The more success I've had, the more people started coming to me with questions. How do you start a business? How do you raise money? How do I bounce back from failure? On my new podcast, Aspire with Emma Grade, I'll be answering these questions and more through weekly conversations with the smartest minds out there. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Grade, an Odyssey podcast, available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
You ready to turn that panic meter up, Keith?
Yeah, I'm going to have to. Yeah, I'm going to have to. It was pretty low prior to yesterday. I'm going to have to change it a little bit. A
couple of notches.
Yeah, I think I was at about a 49. Panic meter goes to 100, obviously. I'm still at a 49. I am a bit shooketh. I got to admit, I'm shooketh.
Okay, good.
I did not expect this to happen.
Let's get in the trust tree and let's make some admissions.
No, it's a mess.
You're shooketh?
The game played out eerily similar to game one. Like, it was 20-point lead second half, see it slip away, have chances late, fumble it around. Obviously, a few different talking points at the end of this game as opposed to game one, but brutal. I mean, there's a lot of crazy stats that came out of the game. I think one of the craziest ones is no team has ever blown 20-point leads in back-to-back playoff games.
Oh,
ever.
Disaster.
Ever. Yeah, thank you, Haven. Ever in the playoffs. This is the first time that's ever happened.
Yeah, it's not good.
Because everyone's like, oh, the Knicks came back from 20. I'm like, no, the Celtics blew 20-point leads twice in consecutive games at home.
But, I mean, I will say this, and that's awful by the Celtics. No team's done that, as you said. And I know why. You start blowing 20-point leads, you're not going to be around in the playoffs for very long. You can't let games like that slip through your fingers when you should be winning those games. I mean, those should be wins you have in your back pocket. So I know why that stat's the case. the Knicks do come through in these spots, and the Celtics,
yeah,
the Celtics haven't to this point. And it does make you wonder who's more calm and collected in the clutch, who can execute better in that spot, and who's playing tight. And right now it's clear which team that is. That's the Boston Celtics, down 0-2, following a 91-90 loss last night at TD Garden.
Ugh.
Against the New York Knicks, a team that not only they swept in the regular season, but largely dominated in the regular season. So we'll get to your thoughts on this all day long, 617-779-7937. It's how you get in touch with Jones and Keith, phone and text line. You can watch and chat twitch.tv, or watch and chat at twitch.tv/BostonWEEI. A good place to watch and chat, of course. Always a healthy chat going on there. Follow along on Twitter and Instagram, at Jones and Keith, and watch on YouTube. Just subscribe to WEEI. And if you're watching today, you'll see we're live inside the Ford Clubhouse Fenway Studio. We're brought to you by your New England Ford dealers. Hurry in to get the employee pricing on the full lineup of vehicles. Ford, from America, for America. You said there's a lot of stats, a lot of concerns coming out of the game. Where do you start, Keith?
All right, let's start at the end. You want to start there and then maybe work our way back?
As a wise woman once said, it's a very good place to start.
Joe Mazzulla is getting a lot of blame after game one, right? Uh-huh. And you and I think agreed that, like, you got to start with the star players. You got to look at Tatum. You got to look at Brown. They're going to get the most credit. They should probably get the most blame, right? I still think it starts with Jason Tatum. But for those that were critical of Joe Mazzulla, you have much more evidence today. You have way more evidence today. The way the game ended is insane. And, like, this, the coach had his fingerprints all over this.
I don't disagree, but what specifically?
All right, so he ran the same play and didn't call a timeout. Ran the same play against an NBA team, and in the postgame, admitted it. In the postgame, he was like, yeah, well, we just ran that before, and, like, Tatum got a bucket, even though not acknowledging the fact that the Knicks were able to sub, and they're a pro basketball team and just saw that play happen. They weren't going to let Tatum essentially get a fast break dunk two plays in a row. So they tried that, and what kills me is Tatum clearly didn't have it, right? Like, Tatum went down. It was not the same setup as it was 12 seconds earlier. And he sort of crosses over. He doesn't fumble it, but it's not a clean crossover. There's still 6 seconds left. You got to call a timeout. You're Joe Mazzulla. You got to say, all right, we tried this. It didn't work.
So I agree with you.
We got to at least stop it and try to get something better.
I didn't hate back pocketing the timeout because maybe Tatum goes down and misses with 6 seconds left. The Knicks come down. They hit free throws. I didn't hate not calling a timeout on the inbound. Once the play is going south and tanking, you gotta be on your toes and calling a timeout to stop it.
But what about the play being the same play?
Not great. Okay. No, it's not great. And as you said, it's a completely different situation because there's different defenders on the floor. And so, yeah, I don't like running the same play. I mean, I get it. I mean, if they can't stop it, you run that again. Tatum did it so easily the first time.
But Mitchell Robinson, as much as we crap on Mitchell Robinson, like, he wasn't in for that first one. They subbed him in at the free throw, so that does change things. Plus, you got to at least give them a little bit of credit to maybe pick up on what you just ran.
Yeah, I think that one can go both ways. If they run it again, it's like, how did the Knicks not stop this? I just think Joe being, like, perplexed by it not working is frustrating and speaks to, again, I mean, Joe's just like, well, we shoot a lot of threes, and sooner or later they're going to go in. Well, we ran this play before and it worked. It's like, well, yeah, teams adjust. I don't necessarily hate running the same play a second time. You got to stop it. Prove to me you can stop it. It worked. Tatum's got a head of steam. Go ahead and prove that you can stop it. And he should have called a timeout once it got blown up.
Right. And it was pretty clear that it was going to be blown up.
I don't necessarily hate running the same play again. Okay. I don't like being incredulous about it after the game. Like, well, it worked before. Of course it was going to work. No. Teams adjust. Teams make switches. Teams are ready for things once you show it to them one time. It's why you can't just, I was guilty of this in Madden, Keith.
Yeah.
You can't run the same play over and over again. It's just not, sooner or later.
All verticals.
Somebody's catching on sooner or later. Yeah. So I am not incredulous when it doesn't work out. That's more what bothered me, is just Mazzulla not understanding how it didn't work.
No, and I think overall, Tatum and Brown are more to blame. But then when you listen to those guys post-game versus listening to Mazzulla post-game, it's easier to get more aggravated with Mazzulla.
Well, for sure.
He just blames everybody else.
Well, Tatum had, I guess, an excuse for not talking, but Tatum didn't talk.
True. Okay.
You know, so, I mean, I know the arena got evacuated.
It did.
Reporters were allowed back in. I'm assuming players were allowed back in. I'm sure he could have talked if he wanted to talk. He didn't.
Taillights.
But he has an excuse to not talk. So we didn't hear from Tatum after the game. But no, Mazzulla was ridiculously frustrating after the game.
And because it's coming off of game one, where he also came off as pretty defensive and, like, changing, not answering questions and just being like, I'm the smartest guy in the world and all that. And, like, oh, you're just going to make shots. All right, well, now the same game plays out. You do nothing. You just stand there as a 20-point lead slips away again. And this one you had your fingerprints on even more, just the way the game ended with the back and forth there at the end, and takes no accountability on it. So it's like you want to blame him even more than he probably deserves, because it still comes down to the players. But, I mean, in a game like this, when you cough up 20-point leads in consecutive games, there's obviously plenty of blame to go around. Nobody's playing well.
No.
There's really nobody you can look to yesterday where you're like, all right, that guy had it.
No. In game one, at least, right. You were like,
Drew Holiday
had a good game. Right. Last night, I don't feel like anybody.
I don't think anybody had a good game.
Played particularly well.
No.
So Tatum would be at the top of my list, but let's stick with Mazzulla here for a moment. We can get to Tatum coming up with all your phone calls again. 617-779-7937. Let's hear the exchange you're referencing there, Keith, on the final sequence at the end of the game. It's a back and forth with our guy, B-Rob.
B-Rob's right in it.
I was yelling at my TV because B-Rob and him got into it, what, yesterday?
After game one, yeah.
I'm sorry, or the day in between the games. Yeah, on Tuesday. Going into game two yesterday, they kind of got into it a little bit.
The duality of man.
And, it's so weird. The Knicks hit their threes and we missed ours. Boy, that's an interesting concept.
Novel concept.
Yeah, like, why? Just make some. Just make some threes. That's all we got to do. Which, by the way, they did not, again, last night in game two.
They're 25 of 100.
Nice.
Yeah.
It's a good ratio.
Uh-huh.
But I was yelling at my TV. I'm like, B-Rob, get him. Get him, B-Rob. Here's the exchange. Yep.
Joe, what was the thought process with not calling timeout there of 12 seconds left?
I had one left. Got a good look on the exact same play 20 seconds earlier. Tried to execute the exact same thing. They did a better job of their lower pickup point, and we weren't able to get the advantage that we had on the last Tatum dunk. So good full court setting. They subbed out Towns. Weren't able to sub out Brunson. Had action there, and we just didn't execute.
Okay, so stop.
Embarrassing.
So hang on. There's more. But
it's pathetic.
That part jumps out to you in the exchange? Okay. Yes. Interesting. So you don't.
No. I don't think it's anything like, B-Rob v. Mazzulla 2.0. I think it's more, it's comical to me that he admits it.
He's like, we ran the same play, and for some reason it didn't work.
Rather than be like, ran the same play.
I'm off the hook because we ran the same play.
We got a good look before.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean you're always going to get a good look. Like, that's crazy to me. You're an NBA coach.
Okay.
There's an NBA coach on the other side.
Yeah.
With five NBA players, and you run the same thing. It's not like you ran it. Oh, we ran it in the regular season. We ran it against them, or even game one. No. You ran it 12 seconds earlier, and he even says, like, "Well, we got a good look on that." You didn't get a good look on this one. The Tatum.
Okay. Well, hang on.
He scored in like 2 seconds.
Well, yeah. Full head of steam. Blue pass.
It looked like a fast break point.
It did. I think he thinks they got another good look. Listen to this. There's more to this exchange, which
not a good look.
This is what jumped out to me. So let's hear the second half of that exchange, because B-Rob, B-Rob's a little emboldened now. He's not going to get Bulldog B-Rob.
I think the B stands for Bulldog.
He is not going to get boxed around by Mazzulla, so he follows up.
And then but how much is the time consideration a factor there with 12, like giving yourself a couple cracks at it? You know, if you advance the ball there potentially.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. So you don't know that at the point of JT was driving left. Thought he had a good look. Saw it at an angle. Didn't shoot it, and ran out of time.
Ran out of time. That's all that happened.
Had a good look. Didn't shoot it. So once again, burying the player.
So that's
Mazzulla loves to bury the player.
So that's what jumped out to me. Now this is the same guy who in game one against Orlando is yelling at Tatum to get up.
Right.
Now, on the final sequence of a loss to go down 0-2 at home against New York, he says, I don't know, I thought Tatum had an angle and he didn't shoot it.
Yeah.
Like, that is burying.
No, after game one, it was Tatum. Like, we need to make them.
Yeah.
They made them, we didn't make them. So just putting it on the guys that need to make shots. Nothing about him, nothing about adjustments. I mean,
Mazzulla
about the call. You called the same thing twice.
Mazzulla might as well say, yeah, I called a good play. Tatum's got to do something with it. Like, yeah. I mean, you might as well just say that. That's what you're saying.
That's basically what he said. No, all I could think of is the guy from I Think You Should Leave when he was like, oh my God, he admitted. And he's like, we ran the same play twice. We got a good look before. Thought we could run it again. It's like, no.
He loves his mother-in-law.
You have to marry your mother-in-law. So he could, but he could have stopped it. He could have... You could have had the best of both worlds, I guess. You could have said, hey, maybe we will catch the Knicks with their pants down. Maybe we will score right away. We like that play. We put the ball in Tatum's hands.
But if it's not there?
It's not there. We have all this time.
Timeout.
Timeout, then actually run something. Like, do you not have a play, like another play to run?
Oh.
Maybe not.
It doesn't seem that way.
Honestly, maybe not.
I mean, I've watched them now for a couple of games against the Knicks. Does not seem like so they have a lot of end-of-game plays. No.
Celtics had a chance to tie it in overtime in game one.
Yep.
Didn't get a shot off.
Nope.
Had a chance to win it in the end of game two. Didn't get a shot off.
No.
That's rough. That's a rough go.
It's
but
it's not ideal.
But Mazzulla's not putting any of that on him.
No.
Which is infuriating.
Why do you think that is? You think he's just – is it like an ego thing? Or do you think he's actually concerned about his future?
He is a maniac, so it is hard to kind of get inside his head and figure out what he's doing. But I have a very harrowing stat, if I'm using that word correctly.
Oh, yeah. Shout out Harrow.
So, yeah, my guy. So this is if I'm Mazzulla, we talked about how, you know, yelling at Jason Tatum, maybe not the best thing for job security.
No, he hasn't heeded that advice because now after game two, he's
sparing the guys.
He actually had a good look.
You know what's a wild stat?
What's that?
So out of the five head coaches that won the NBA Finals prior to Mazzulla. Okay. Right, so Mazzulla won it last year. So the five previous, five different teams, right? Because we were talking about, hey, the, you know, nobody's won back-to-back. So five different head coaches have won the NBA title prior to Mazzulla. Do you know how many are still with their team?
Okay, so Kerr definitely.
That's it.
That's the whole list?
Yeah.
Nick Nurse is gone.
Nick Nurse gone. Frank Vogel.
Gone.
Gone.
You don't even count that one.
Mike Frank Budenholzer. Vogel.
Budenholzer gone.
Michael Malone.
And Malone.
Yeah. So you win a title, you're like, oh, that's job security. It is not.
Okay, well, and if you remember, Mazzulla was asked about this in real time when Malone got fired, and his answer was something like, well, you know, this is like what we sign up for, and this, and we talked about that at the time. We're like, you know, you could not win a title 2 years in a row.
Yeah.
I didn't necessarily think one at the time. The way this is going, I don't rule anything out. I wouldn't call it likely, but I don't rule anything out.
But the formula to that, too, is, and you heard it in the intro, the stat, was it Harlan that had it?
Yeah.
Like, not only have teams not won back-to-back.
They don't get out of the second round.
They lose in the second round, which also speeds up the process of those guys getting canned. And then it's, you know, how does your best player feel about you, I would say. That's the only guy that could probably save you. If Jokic really wanted Malone or if Giannis really wanted Budenholzer, I think those guys would still be there. They did not.
No. Well, when you start to lose, and I don't mean like have a losing record, but start to not win a championship and people start looking at you.
Especially when you're the heavy favorite. They were minus 800 to win the series at the beginning of this whole thing.
They're still minus. I heard Shime say that this morning. When I looked it up last night.
I thought you said they were plus.
They were briefly plus 110. That changed this morning. They're minus
I put too much money on
they're it. They're minus 120. Is what I heard Shime say that, and I was like, let me fact check.
I put a PS5 on it.
He's so right. Last night, the Celtics were plus money. Some places, I'm not saying everywhere, but they were plus money last night for the series. Buying opportunity?
Or sucker's bet. Buying opportunity. Well, because if they win on Saturday,
it's
going to drastically
It's going to skyrocket.
Yeah.
I heard Curtis say this as well. If you swap Thibodeau and Mazzulla, I actually got asked about this the other day on TV, Keith Bragg.
Oh, wow.
Going into the series.
Bragg, must be nice.
Thank you. And I was asked who was the better coach in the series going in. I'm like, Mazzulla, easy. Tips thinks.
Yeah.
I'm not so sure that's been the case through the first two games. I still think Mazzulla's a better coach than Thibodeau. If you swap the coaches, are the Celtics up 2-0?
No. I don't know about that. I don't know if you swap the coach. And I'm down on Mazzulla, trust me, right now. No, I'm very down on Mazzulla.
If they're still down 0-2 with a different coach, then it's about Tatum, and it's about Brown, and it's about the players.
Well, it's tough because if Thibodeau's actually the coach here, but Brad Stevens is still running the show, like from the front office, are they taking as many threes still? Or is Thibodeau being like, hey, we're not doing that? Because Thibodeau, you would think, would have a better defensive team in New York, and he doesn't. So he sort of changed his ways a little bit, welcoming in Karl-Anthony Towns and kind of playing that way. But if, let's say they switch the coaches, but it was the same regular season, 53s a game, that kind of thing, I don't think Thibodeau's going to make them hit all their shots. Yeah. I mean, the big story is they are just missing at an alarming rate.
And the crowd was on them. The crowd was on them early when they were missing last night. Yeah. They looked tight.
Yeah,
they looked tight early
on. Hard watch
on just threes.
Brick City is a hard watch.
Crowd's on them. They know it. We've been talking about it for 48 hours straight going into the game, and it's like they can't keep launching threes. And they played like it was in their head. They looked like it was in their head last night. So, look, I think if Thibodeau were here, they'd still be down 0-2. I blame the players. I'm not saying Mazzulla's blameless. The head coach gets some blame. I didn't like the end of game. I really hate listening to him after the game, after some of these losses. But that's more of a taste and aesthetic that's not necessarily how he's coaching the game. I look at the players. They gotta, in Mazzulla's words, make some shots. Yeah. And that does not just mean launch away from three.
Bombs away means,
all right, you were trying to play some bully ball and go to the hoop last night. You got to hit those. Those I'm a little more with Mazzulla on.
That was the voice of Jason Tatum talking about last night's loss, and he expects himself to be better. That's good, because I expect him to be a lot better, too, because he sucked. He absolutely sucked in this performance. WEEI Afternoons here, Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy Stevens, Ted Johnson, and this is really starting to, and I was with you, Ted, you referenced it to close out last segment. I thought Jason Tatum had turned a corner. I thought he had reached a new level. I thought his pursuit of being this face of the NBA, I'm the best player, if you took my name off it, I deserve so much more respect. And Scal said it yesterday, if you're going to ask for respect and better attention from the masses and the media and the fans, you can't go out there and lay an egg in a game like this at home in front of your home fans. It's not just him. We can get into everybody. Mazzulla is in the firing range of our criticism. So is Jaylen Brown. So Porzingis, whatever's going on with him. But Jason Tatum wants to be not just the superstar leader of the Boston Celtics. He wants to be the superstar face of the NBA. And to go out there and lay an egg like this, to go down 2-0, and then some of the comments that he's had today other than just that were like, you know, you have to be the same guy no matter what. No. There are theories about clutch, and there are theories about, you know, when the going gets tough, the tough actually raise their game and take it to another level and get going. So I'm going to start there with you, Ted. I am going to co-sign, as they say. I was wrong when I acknowledged that Jason Tatum had become a better player and more clutch player. This was an embarrassing performance for him last night, and he's going to have a label stamped on him if he doesn't start changing some things.
Hey, Andy, you know what? We were both wrong, all right? We were both wrong. And so, you know, a lot of people, you know, came at me on Twitter when I admitted I gave JT his flowers, and they're like, he's been this guy the whole time. I'm like, no, he really hasn't. And I don't know how you look at Jason Tatum in these first two games of the series and don't question whether or not he has the medal. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, in the last two games in the fourth quarter, so when it really matters, when it's nut cutting time, he's had 23 minutes of play. He's 2 for 14, 8 points, 0 for 7 from 3-point land. And the Celtics are outscored by 15 points when he's on the court in the fourth quarter in these first two games of the series. So that tells you all you need to know. And I really thought maybe I saw a little fight in him, you know, in that Orlando Magic series. I saw him maybe it was against the Orlando Magic, Andy and Fitzy. Maybe it was like, you know, I'll have our guys' backs and I'll fight back a little bit and I'll show some grit because it's the Orlando Magic. The Knicks, where's that fight? It's like it shouldn't be, you know, one series you see it and the other series you don't. It was hugely disappointing. And I'm telling you, the performance from these last two games, it's going to hurt his legacy and how he's perceived, because everything you just said, Andy, people are not going to look at Jason Tatum the way he wants. And he thought just winning, you know, the championship last year, that all would all go away. You know what? There's a lot of one and dones, right? I mean, you see it all the time. You got to validate what happened last year by going out there and doing it again this year. And then you really kind of set your legacy on a path you want, Fitzy.
That is correct. That's why I said we have an identity issue going on in these this finals. My God, these semifinals in the Eastern Conference right now. Jason Tatum begging to be the face of the NBA in the post-LeBron era, wanting to be him, the man, the guy, now just not showing up in the clutch again, just like, unfortunately, he didn't back in those conference finals 2 years ago against Miami, like he hasn't time and again. I don't know. What is he? We know he can be the leader. We know he can be unstoppable. But, you know, the guy that scored 46, I hate the fact that we only have just like a few small examples over the course. We got 50-something against Philadelphia. We got 46 against Milwaukee. And then we have some, you know, tenacious effort against Orlando. Otherwise, you know, and a dunk against LeBron in his first playoffs. Otherwise, we have more failures. We have more letdowns. We have more games like last night where he just disappears for times. I don't know what he's thinking. I don't know why he isn't trying harder. And for him and Mazzulla, first for your coach not to call a timeout so that you guys can set yourselves up on the final play, and then for Tatum to go right back to the same well. Man, Andy, someone's not – people aren't talking on this team. They're just operating individually. It's like five individuals playing a team of New York Knicks.
Can I just jump in real quick, Andy? And you asked Fitzy, like, what is Jason Tatum? Jason Tatum is like a Sam Rockwell, like a Christopher Walken, like a Chris Cooper, like a Javier Bardem, like a Christopher Waltz, right? Okay, you see where I'm going? He's a supporting actor. He's a really good supporting actor. He's not the main actor. He's more of a supporting actor. That's what it feels like. That's how he's performing. That's how he's playing in these last two games, in my opinion.
Some of those guys have won Oscars, though. So,
well, he's won a title.
In a supporting role. Yeah,
I mean, he's won a title in a supporting role because the MVP was Jaylen Brown. So you said, Fitzy, we've seen him lead and be the guy. Mm-hmm. I don't know that we have at the highest level when it's needed the most. And my comparison would be, Ted, is I think he has lead actor ability, but he doesn't have lead actor fire, desire, execution. There is something lacking. And, you know, he said it like, what they're going to say now? Well, we're going to continue to evaluate you. We're not just going to continue to say, oh, you sucked in games one and two against the Knicks, but you won the title last year, so we're not going to criticize it. No, we're going to evaluate you on a game-by-game, series-by-series, season-by-season basis, and he brings this upon himself. 617-779-7937. Let's work in the phone calls because I know they are loaded and people want to talk Celtics and Missoula and Tatum. So let's start with Collis in Beverly. What are your thoughts on that Celtics loss last night, Collis?
Hey, great stuff, guys. I just think Missoula at this point has been the coach for far too long. It's literally like a photocopy of that Heat series from a few years ago, and the fact that he's not calling these timeouts this far removed from that Heat series, just unacceptable, dude. And to not call a timeout and to tell him to rein in the threes, just get the twos when we're up by 20 almost or more, you know? I mean, we got to make a change there. I think that's our number one. I don't think we're taking this series. I think it's on Missoula.
All right, thanks for the call, Collis.
He's coming under a lot of heat, Andy. I mean,
he should be. He should be. You're the coach. I mean, we talked about it after game one. I think the poll was 54%. Ted, you came in. Your three-point stance was right out the gates. It's on the coach because I know it's the NBA, and everybody says it's a star-driven league and the players are what matter, not necessarily the coaching, and it's not like football, but there are key times in games, in series, in seasons where I do believe NBA coaches change the dynamic, whether it's with a play. Well, that's the one thing. They don't even have plays. And whether it's him or his staff, whether it was Brad Stevens and his assistant coaches, they don't have plays with the game on the line. So there's a combination. Your stud player isn't capable of taking over games when the game is on the line. He's not some freakish Kobe closer with the heart of a champion. And then you don't have the ability to draw up plays and get guys free. Yep. So, like, that's it right there. They are a team that lacks an ability to close. Forget all the other misses and all that. Because of the coach and the superstar, they can't close the toughest games at the toughest times.
And you mentioned plays.
No
like,
profit for the Celtics.
I wonder if you just have to wonder, like, does he not call a timeout? Because then he's got to design a play from half court to get someone open and to, you know, hit the winning shot. Like, And that's it's like you saw an inbound play looked like from the game before. It got the ball got stolen, right? It didn't even get a shot off, right? And so you almost think he just lets them play because, you know what, I don't want to like have to draw up a play because I don't really know how to. You just needed all you needed was 2 points. You had plenty of time to run a play from the inbounds to get a good open shot for a 2-point bucket to win that game. And I think that's part of it. I mean, and honestly, what was the hack Hakeem Olajuwon Robinson marathon that we had to watch? Plus 19? That audio is I couldn't believe it. I mean, you're talking about a guy. It's not Shaquille O'Neal out there. It's what is it? Mitchell Robinson, who had 6 points. I know he's a good, you know, kind of rim defender, but that's it. I mean, it just you were occupying energy and effort for something that you didn't need to do. And I thought it made him look really just like the moment was too big for him right there. I did it. So I'm down on the coaching right now, Fitzy.
You should be, Ted, because even if he can't just take a timeout and calm them down, or if he looks in Tatum's eyes and sees that he doesn't have it, if he can't design a play for somebody else as well. And this whole entire idea, like, I think I've called him like Montessori Missoula before. The idea that he, like, the whole approach of like, get up and, you know, I don't need to call a timeout. How many games? I would love to know of the X number of games he's coached in the regular season and the postseason. How many times has he left the court with timeouts in his pocket? It would probably be almost 40, maybe 50%, because he doesn't like to. He has this approach of, you know, well, you're adults, you're professional basketball players, you guys go figure it out. You want to do that in the first 5, 10, 20, 30 games of the season so the machine can teach itself. This is how AI works. This is how the brain works. This is how people and athletes work. Mm-hmm. So you can teach yourself how to be successful in critical winning time situations. That's great. Now's not the time for doing that. They are 82, 87. This is the 89th game of the season. You're already down 1-0, and you could see your team was fading again in the second half. Otherwise, what purpose does the coach serve? I legitimately ask, what is he doing out there if he can't help either inject some life in there or avert a crisis like what was going on in the fourth quarter last night?
So let's hear that audio of Joe Mazzulla explaining why he didn't call a timeout and what exactly he was doing on that final possession to lose the game.
Process with not calling timeout there with 12 seconds left.
Had one left, got a good look on the exact same play 20 seconds earlier. Tried to execute the exact same thing. They did a better job of their lower pickup point, and we weren't able to get the advantage that we had on the last Tatum dunk. So good full court setting. They subbed out Towns, weren't able to sub out Brunson. Had action there, and we just didn't execute.
So, Joe, you expected the Knicks to embarrass themselves two possessions in a row. Because I'm assuming the Knicks are a little embarrassed that dunk they allowed by Tatum on the previous possession.
No doubt.
And they're professionals. They have a coach over there who, I believe, Tibbs, isn't known for his hair. He's actually known for his defensive coaching and prowess. He's a veteran, longtime coach. He's a guy that is not going to allow that to happen twice, in my opinion, with the game on the line. And I also just think, Ted, from your perspective, you know, like, Bill Belichick had that favorite two-point play with the, oh my God, the snap went over Brady's head. Oh,
right,
no, it
right.
didn't. It's directly.
It's
if you ran that
Kevin
two,
Falk.
Yeah, but if you ran that two plays in the row and Ted Johnson's the
That's
middle
so
linebacker,
true.
I don't think Ted Johnson is falling for it twice. Maybe once. I don't even know if Ted Johnson would fall for it once, but he's not falling for it twice. And Joe Mazzulla's plan, he is an NBA head coach. His plan is, well, it worked last possession, so I just figured we do the exact same thing. That was pure idiocy right there. That was embarrassing for the Boston Celtics and their head coach.
It was. It absolutely was. I mean, you know, and it was, again, it was shocking to, he admitted, I think sometimes Joe just gets over his skis and there's a defiance to him. There's a defiance. Like, you know, what was the game before? The duality, he was just, you know, he just almost flabbergasted. I think it was B-Rob that would ask him about all this, you know, how
in
dare you
in both occasions
ask about,
it was, Ted.
Yeah. Right. And so there's this defiance. And so I think he just doesn't realize what he's saying, how it might be perceived. I mean, literally, like, Joe, if you're telling everybody that all you got to do is whatever team shoots the most threes is going to win, Why do we need a coach? What do you do as a coach? Then you're basically just minimizing your entire your profession and job. Is if hey whoever shoots the most threes is going to win the game. And so I there was pressure on Joe Mazzulla to look. You got everybody felt like this team is the best, far and away the best team, you know, in the NBA, at least to start the season. And odds, I mean, they might not have been the favorites, you know, at midway, but a lot of people thought this team should be repeating. And there's pressure on that. And Joe is just not answering the bell when it comes to this pressure. And in these last two games, I mean, for New York Knicks, it's kind of like, oh, man, you know, it's like in Rocky IV. Well, this guy bleeds, man. These guys, we see in their eyes the doubt and uncertainty, and now we got them right where we want them.
I'll tell you, Andy, last night combing through the socials post-game, there certainly wasn't very much love for Jason Tatum. There really was no love for Joe Mazzulla. And while you still had some, you know, obnoxious green bleeders going, Celtics in six, Celtics in six, this is, you know, this. I may have said Celtics in four, but this is what I always saw. There were not a lot of apologists. There were not a lot of sensitive green teamers out there saying, like, but the refs, but the starting time, but the this, but the that. Like, for Celtics fans en masse and at large to now also be realizing that their hero and their favorite player isn't coming through, their team is faltering, the excuses have run dry, and the coach is out of answers, is legitimately alarming.
And Fitzy, Andy, real quick, just you listen to the post game last night. I mean, you got Eddie House and Scal. They said this, quote, "This team is fractured." Those are former players saying it, not just radio hosts, you know, that do drive. They are
fractured
former
how,
players,
though, Ted, like emotionally fractured or like fractured as in like broken.
You know what? My feeling is emotionally. Like, they didn't go into – I just remember it was Scal saying, this team is fractured. And I just found that to be pretty important stuff for a former player who covers this team and is not, you know, one for – or you know, to be hyperbolic like that, to say this team is fractured when just, you know, I don't know, a week ago – that you never would have said that. And so it feels like they've been exposed these last two games. Can they overcome it? You know what? It would do a lot as far as their legacies and to kind of, you know, here's the thing. Fans here, we want tough, mentally tough, you know, teams. You know, can guys overcome obstacles? Can they overcome, the things put in front of them? And this is going to be a huge test for that. My feeling is, what I've seen so far, that they're not going to answer the bell, but, we'll see. I mean, that's why you still play the games.
617-779-7937. Let's go back to the phone lines. Jesse in New Bedford, I'm sure he has a strong reaction to this Celtics loss last night. What's up, Jesse?
Hey, what's going on, guys? You know, I usually call with the Pats. That's my number one, but I had to call in here. Ted Johnson, he's absolutely right. Listen, the reason why everybody picked the Celtics is because they have more talent. But with the problem with the media and a lot of fans, nobody looks at, you know, you can't put it on a piece of paper. The heart, the desire, the determination, the will to win, the clutch gene. And I'm sorry, they won last year, but that was fool's gold. And I don't even care if they even come back in this series. There's going to be another time, another series, another team that it's going to get tough, and they're going to will. Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, I saw there was a couple loose balls. Jaylen Brown standing there, like his 2 feet are in cement, reaching for the ball, not jumping, not diving, not nothing. They don't have the will to win. They got no heart. They're going to lose this series, and then that's it. Everybody overlooks this all the time. It's always the talent. Just like with Will Campbell, he can't do it. He's got alligator arms. Yeah, but he's got heart. Look at the way the guy talks. He's a warrior. And that's what the media always overlooks, and that's what fans overlook. And the Celtics will lose, whether it's this series or the next. They don't have it inside. They don't have the cojones.
All right, thanks
for the
call, Jesse.
That's a good way of looking at it. I love cojones.
I also think it's funny, you know, a lame dad joke here. The Knicks literally and figuratively have the heart in this series, right? They have a heart that is playing in aggressive
style. Josh Hart, yeah.
Highest,
Josh Hart.
Would you have had, what were the odds last night, since you're so wont to talk about, like, I pulled out my app and placed a little wager on X, Y, or Z of the game
Thankfully,
last night.
I didn't.
Yeah, I know, because I got cleaned
Learned
out
my
last
lesson.
Night. Yeah.
I don't trust this Celtics team. I'm not
By
putting
the way,
my
team,
money
the
where
team
my mouth
in town
is.
I have lost the most on in this town is the Celtics, and it's
because they're
a
maddening.
Wide margin. They are, but like, did you anyone have Josh Hart being the high scorer in the game with a whopping 23?
No, but I didn't think the Celtics wouldn't show up, and they are. I actually generally think to question a professional athlete's heart or a team's heart, a championship team's heart, is probably premature and unfair. But when you look at what they're doing and the way they're playing, and I don't know what the words are, Ted, if it's fractured or they're lacking heart or cohesion, something ain't right for a team that is supposed to be, you know, perfectly built for this, and they've been together now multiple years, and Brown and Tatum's relationship, and Joe is the perfect coach. They do not look right. Something stinks.
Hey, Ted, let me ask you this. I got two for you. One, how badly do you think, you know, let's look at all the trays at the excuse buffet right now. How full is the chafing dish of Kristaps Porzingis is sick and they're not able to do as much as they want to?
Who cares? You play without him all the time. You play without him all the time.
They usually win without him as well, but like,
yeah, screw off with that one. Move on.
I remember I asked it to Ted. Did you change your name before the start of today's show?
Sorry, I just reacted.
Okay. All right. Ted.
make
now that
excuse.
Andrew's done interrupting you. What do you think?
I think they need KP, and more than I think what you guys have said. So I'm more of a KP fan than maybe he. Look, he was in and out, and it. Some what is up? I have no idea. But he, I would rather him give what he gave last night, which wasn't much, than nothing at all. I think he is somebody that can be a difference maker for this team. And if you watch some of the pregame, it was Charles Barkley kept saying that the what makes this team special, the Boston Celtics special, is Kristaps Porzingis. And it kind of, he's the guy that puts this team over. I don't think, you know, people that know this game, like, they know that he is the one that when he's on and he's playing and he's healthy, it is almost impossible to beat this team. And so I just think he's more important than what others think.
So we've learned it's quite possible to beat this team because the Knicks have done it two games in a row at TD mm-hmm. Garden. They will get back at it on Saturday in New York, 3:30. I don't know if last night was a must-win. Saturday seems like a must-win. We'll talk about that next here on WEEI Afternoons. Continue to take your phone calls. But first, Dan Ball, give me what's trending.
A big one tomorrow for this Celtics team who is looking to repeat, and you can talk about it all day long here on Boston Sports Original, WEEI. 3:30, first tip tomorrow, and I'm sure that at some point, I'm not sure, but maybe somebody will get to it in the remaining leads this morning, and we are after the leads. We'll get to They Said It. Quick back and forth on what they said yesterday in sports. Before that, we'll get to the weekly wrap-up with an R with Acrobatic in about 15 minutes. But good morning, Curtis.
Good morning, Greg. We have covered Devers to this point, so I'll jump into a little bit of the Celtics tomorrow. Massive game. I think we do get a big game from Tatum tomorrow.
Yeah.
But if the Knicks win this series, you can't be worse than 07 perfect season losing to the Giants. But I think this would be the second worst loss to a New York team in Boston sports history.
Mm.
When you consider everything that's on the line, given the stupid apron talk, and if they're going to have this team, according to Shams and others, they're not going to resemble the exact same roster next year. The league is, quote, bracing for change, unquote. They are so much better than the Knicks. They may be more talented than the Knicks than the Patriots were to the Giants. Not sure. I have to go roster to roster.
Yeah.
But it would be the most pathetic way to end what could have been the start of a dynastic run.
So in your mind, if the Knicks bounce them out of round number two, it's not because the Knicks overperformed their roster, it is because the Celtics way underperformed when it comes to their talent.
Correct. Because we all watch, when you're up 20 more than halfway through the third quarter and consecutive. I was saying to Ken yesterday, like, in my life, I've never seen the exact same movie occur in back-to-back games of the playoffs.
Yeah.
Like, it's literally never happened that a team has lost consecutive games after having 20-point leads in NBA playoff history.
I would say biggest choke job in Boston sports history from a Boston sports team. Like, biggest choke job.
The Bruins team that had the best regular season record of all time.
Yeah, but see, this team was a repeat. The Bruins didn't win a championship the year before. So we all were like, yeah. Repeat.
Same team. And got it done pretty easy last year. And
played really well in the regular season.
And yeah. I think I'm. When people say that I'm wrong, this is my new step forward, Greg. Then it's usually on me that I may have been unclear. I'm not saying painful loss.
Yeah.
Like Boone, people are mentioning 86 or the Boone home run. I'm talking about mismatch, upset, loss to a New York team.
Like a choke job.
What about the Bucky Dent, the one-game playoff?
Yeah.
Was that 78?
78.
I was only 12 years old then,
no,
Curtis.
But if it was a one-game playoff, that meant after 162 games, the Red Sox and Yankees had an identical record. The Celtics are much better than the Knicks.
Right.
Much better than that Red Sox team was to the Yankees in 78.
We were all thinking, well, not all of us, but there are a lot of people thinking sweep, 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 sweep. You won a championship last year. You basically retained the whole team. The expectations on this team this year were getting back to the NBA Finals and repeating. The Bruins, yeah, they choked in that playoff when they had that history season. But I don't think anybody expected that season from them. It kind of came out of nowhere. Our expectations for this team and to choke away against a team and, you know, throw the other factor in there, Courtney, that you always bring up, a team that you swept during the regular right. season and handled pretty yeah. easily.
All right, Curtis, thank you. Courtney, good morning.
Good morning, everybody. It's been pretty quiet on the Aaron Rodgers watch front, but Mike Florio spoke to a radio station in Pittsburgh and says sources are telling him why Aaron Rodgers has not signed yet. So he says a source told him the theory that Aaron Rodgers is waiting to sign with the Steelers until after the NFL schedule release so the league doesn't load up on early Steelers primetime games. What? So diving in a bit deeper, people say, well, Tom Brady didn't perform as well at the end of his career during nighttime games. At Aaron Rodgers' older age, you know, nighttime could become more difficult for him, and he's looking to really make a splash.
Right. He needs to have dinner at 4 p.m. Mm-hmm. like the rest of us who are getting on.
There's other people that are bringing up the fact, people think Aaron Rodgers is now married. He was wearing a ring on that finger at the Kentucky Derby.
Married to whom?
Brittany. Nobody knows who she is. Her name's Brittany. Okay. It's very serious. Okay. She doesn't have social media, but she's really into astrology, I guess.
All right.
And, you know, whether or not she's saying, no, nighttime isn't good for you, whatever. So that's the reason why reportedly Aaron Rodgers has not signed with the Steelers. Now, the schedule comes out on May 14th. So if by the end of the day on May 15th, Aaron Rodgers still is not signed, Wiggy, it's time to really talk retirement.
I don't think so. I think it's the money thing. You think Pittsburgh's going to go into the season with Mason Rudolph and Will Howard?
Well, we're talking about, no, they're saying until the schedule's released.
No, but I'm just saying the Pittsburgh Steelers, if you're the Steelers sitting there and you're a playoff team, there's no way you're saying, all right, we're going into the season with Mason Rudolph and the sixth round pick and Will Howard with a playoff ready team. You'll do whatever in your power to make sure you can get Rodgers at least for 1 year.
All right, Courtney, thanks. Wiggy, hello.
All right, good morning. I'm going to make mine really quick for this game on Saturday. I will know whether or not the Celtics will be able to win this game very early in the game. That should be about halftime, because if they're not shooting over 30% from the three-point line at the end of the first half, I will be extremely concerned, because then that means the shots ain't falling. And then in the second half, we already know what they're going to do. They're going to put up their number of shots, and their rhythm is not going to be there. But if they shoot out over 30%, I'll feel good about it, because when the Celtics shoot north of 30% in a game, and they generally win the basketball game, especially from three-point land. So I will know very early on how the Celtics potentially could be doing in the second half, and I think we all will, is how well they shoot the ball in the first half from three-point land.
Okay, thank you.
You got it, brother.
Shime, are we going to hear what Perk said about the Celtics yesterday during they said it or not?
Yeah, we absolutely can, Greg.
Okay. So, and he's currently noted, I guess, with regard to this particular team. Perk is sometimes a noted Celtics hater, so take it with a grain of salt. But anyway, Perk says they're cooked, and we'll hear that. If they are not cooked, and if they are going to win this series, Jason Tatum needs to show everyone that he is what he wants us to look at him as. The face of the NBA, the MVP, the superstar that I believe, we had an argument yesterday about what he has said about it, how he said it, whatever. I believe that Jason Tatum expects that the other players in the league and the media and the fans are going to look at him as the guy. If that's what he wants, then it is up to him to go out and win this series for the Boston Celtics.
Hands down, I agree with you 150%.
And if he doesn't,
then it's all on him. Okay. Your commercial just came out where you're, you know, promoting the new Superman movie, and you're walking around like Clark Kent, open up your thing. And it's at the point now, and Tatum, You have to understand this. So if you're listening to this, brother, you got to understand it. This team is your team. And no matter what people say about Jaylen Brown, you can love him, you can dislike him, his personality, but you already know, Tatum, when ish hits the fan, you get blamed. No matter how poorly Brown plays, it is going to come down on you. So you better take advantage and walk through that door, not like Clark Kent, but you better walk out like Superman.
Right. And Colin Cowherd yesterday, Greg, echoed what I said about Steve Kerr. The national conversation on one of the biggest national shows was that we all gave Steve Kerr a hard time about the Olympics, but we're seeing why Tatum was on the bench. And this is, I mean, of all the, if they lose this series and Tatum doesn't, you know, put the team on his back, it would leave a permanent scar on that reputation.
Oh, yeah.
That's what superstars do, right? And you name the superstar in that league, Michael Jordan, Steph Curry,
Dino Raja.
You want to be in those names. Kobe.
Like, Kobe, his idol. Like, those guys put everybody on their shoulders and go out and win not just the game on Saturday, but the series.
Yep.
And so it's big for him.
Oh, it's massive. It's massive for his kind of early legacy in basketball.
All right. Those are our leads. This is Bones from Marlboro. What's up, Bones?
Yeah, hey, how you doing, guys?
Great.
Listen, I'll try to be quick. Curtis, I respectfully disagree with regards to the worst losses to New York teams. The 0-3 Aaron Boone home run still stings me. You're right about the perfect season, the loss to the Giants. That's number one. But for me, it was that Boone home run in 0-3.
Right, and I think I didn't say it accurately or didn't convey it properly. What I'm saying is not toughest, biggest gut punch.
Okay.
I'm saying biggest upset.
Choke job.
Biggest choke, biggest loss to a team you were better than. Like the 86 Mets won 108 games in the regular season. The Red Sox won 95.
Right.
They lost the series to a better team. They should have won the series. But I'm talking about...
Like 07 was a choke job.
Right. The Patriots were a two-touchdown favorite to the Giants, and that was all that was between them and a perfect season. That's number one. If the Celtics lose this series, that will be the second biggest upset, pathetic loss by a Boston team to a New York team in my lifetime.
Is it too late for Bill Chisholm to turn the team back in and get his money back? Or how does that work?
Does he have like a 30-day, you know?
Do they get a store credit?
What is the return policy on an days. NBA franchise?
Basketball team lemon law?
Yeah, I think it's 30 days. Check how long it's been.
The lemon law with cards.
This is not the Tatum I signed up for.
All right. Let's get to Courtney and to what is trending this hour.
Jones and Keefe, weekdays 10 to 2.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Trending now brought to you by the 99 and Shime. I know you're not going to PAX East, but maybe you should reconsider because this evening from 10:30 to 11 p.m., it's Cheese Thief at the Deception Zone.
Oh.
It's a fast-paced social deduction game for 4 to 8 players in a fantasy-themed world.
Oh.
Play either as one of the normal sleepyheads dreaming about the taste of delicious cheese in tomorrow's meal, or as the thief trying to steal away the cheese for his own belly.
Oh, that's right up your alley.
This sounds like a game made for me.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
Yes.
What time did you say that is?
10:30 to 11 p.m. this evening.
I am free this evening, so.
Yes. Is there actual teeth or is it IRL?
Don't worry, Greg. I'll just bring my own.
Okay.
The Red Sox shut out the Rangers to take the series final score 5-0 for
Chris
Fenway.
Chris Sheim putting the whiz in Wizard.
With Liam Hendricks closing this one out for 2 innings. Brian Baio had the start. He struck out 1 over 4 2/3. Rafi Devers homered in this one. And, of course, we've been talking about it all morning long, but Jim McCaffrey had the tweet that went everywhere saying Rafael Devers says he's not willing to play first base, doesn't understand why the team wants him to move again after asking him to change positions in spring training. He said things are fine in the clubhouse, but he's clearly frustrated with Breslow.
And Chris Cotillo reported late last night, I just saw it, that teammates were hearing, paying close attention to Devers and not pleased with what he had to say to the media last night.
Okay, so, and we'll get to that audio. Are we getting to that audio during they said it?
Yeah, let's do it, Greg.
Okay, but Rafael Devers is frustrating his teammates. That is what is being reported, Curtis.
Correct.
Okay. What's Casas saying?
The Sox now turn their attention to the Royals. They're in Kansas City with first pitch at 7:40 this evening. Lenny DiNardo joins Will Fleming on the Shaw's and Star Market WEEI Red Sox Radio Network. Shaw's perfecting the art of fresh. Kick things off with Christian Arcan at 6:40 for the MassMutual pregame show. The Celtics take on the Knicks in New York tomorrow at 3:30. But last night's NBA game, the Timberwolves tie things up with the Warriors 117-93, the final of that one. And in the NHL, Edmonton goes up two games on the Golden Knights, and the Capitals tie up their series with the Hurricanes. Celebrate Mother's Day at the 99 restaurant and treat mom to delicious new menu specials made especially for her, like herb garlic filet mignon, lemon caper swordfish, or their famous colossal or hot buttered lobster rolls. You gotta love the nines. That's what's trending. Here's Curtis with your weather.
And Wiggs, it went over my head. Excellent Casas question about how the lineup should look. Well done. 50 degrees in Boston, feels like 43, rainy afternoon, high of 57.
Yeah, now that's the opposite of what just kind of happened. That Perk finally nailed that one at the end.
Yeah.
I feel like this other clip, strong, like the Knicks are going to win the series, series is over, Celtics aren't going to come back.
You're laying it on too thick.
When he just kind of tucked in at the tail end, they'll be lucky to even get a game.
It's over.
Yeah, no, the series is over.
You don't need to go that far. Just saying they're going to win the series, and you said game two is a must win, like you got that going for you.
Pretty bold.
Bold.
They're going to be lucky.
Bold flavor.
He's got to win the next two.
He's predicting a big Deuce McBride game. He's going to play well at home. Well, you think it's going to be a big Deuce McBride game?
Well, the role players do play better at home. I mean, I agree with that general premise. He's a role player. I don't know that I'd pick him out specifically.
Yeah, like, okay. I suppose. But, I mean, another guy hyping up Mitchell Robinson. What am I missing here?
If you have big Deuce and then you have also Deuce Tatum, where does Deuce McBride fit into all of it?
Do we have to do a Mount Rushmore of Deuces right now?
Sure.
Deuce McAllister.
Oh, Deuce McAllister. Nice player.
Deuce Staley.
Wait, was I getting Deuce Staley confused with Deuce McAllister?
No, Deuce McAllister is better.
Deuce McAllister Saints?
Yeah, Deuce McAllister.
Deuce Staley.
D-U-C-E. Deuce Staley. D-U-C-E.
Deuce Staley Eagles.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, you're right. I had it right the first time. Other Deuces.
Tatum's kid.
Yep.
And
Rafael Devers in the middle of last game.
Pablo Sandoval when he was liking Instagram models. Yeah, there you go.
All right, Deuce Mount Rushmore. We settled that quickly. Yeah,
I mean, I don't think they're going to get swept. Right? That's not happening.
No,
they're not getting swept. Like Perk's,
I think they
Perk is just Perk's just riding high right now.
Yeah,
because
it's just it got away.
He
from
said
him.
It was a must win.
It
so
got away from
like,
him at the end.
Right. He's like, if that was a must win, they lost it.
Yeah.
Then in his head, he's like, well, the Knicks then have to win the series. Which is fine. Go with that. That's still a bold take. Like they're going to win the series, but to be like, all right, they're just going to win out. Like I don't know.
I mean, the Knicks right now are plus money. It briefly got to Knicks minus money after game two, but it's back to the Celtics are minus money in the series. They're the favorite, in other words. So right, it's bold enough to say the series is over, which I don't agree with.
It's not over,
but already that was a good question. To tack on, they'll be lucky to get a game. Felt a little strong. You also don't think the series is over. In fact, you think the Celtics are winning the series.
I do. I still think they are going to win the series. I know the numbers when you're down 0-2 certainly aren't in your favor. But, of course, a lot of times the team that is up 0-2 is the team that is a whole lot better. And then they're able to just win the series, no matter whether it's a sweep, 5, 6, 7 games. Because I just think if they win tomorrow, sort of when they win tomorrow, 2-1, like I don't think all of a sudden you're like, oh, my God, this is over. Maybe that's a little bit of doubt for the Knicks and all that stuff. So, no, I think the Celtics win the series. It's just a lot more difficult than I thought it was going to be.
Look, I think it's a bit of a coin flip, but I would lean Celtics. I got to pick now who's going to win the series. I would still take the Celtics in this series. I'm not very confident in it, but you're asking me to pick it. That's how I would pick it. You hear Shaq say, was it last night or was it the night prior? I forget. But Shaq said it's actually a bigger – game three is actually bigger for New York. More of a must-win for New York, agree or disagree. Like, don't give the Celtics any life, that sort of idea.
Yeah, I get that. I get that. Wiggy was saying the same thing. Wiggy says whoever wins game three wins the series.
Okay, so that is effectively what I didn't realize Wiggy said that. That's effectively what
Shaq
said.
I would agree with that, right? Like, because at first you're like, but I think if they're down 0-3, they're probably not going to win.
No.
And I already think the Celtics are going to win, so if they win, then
No, game three is a must-win for the – tomorrow is a must-win for the Celtics.
Yeah.
But I think if the Knicks lose game three, they could easily win game four at home, and they'll go on to win the series. Like I don't think whoever wins game three wins the series necessarily. It's huge for the Celtics. The Knicks can afford to drop
it. No, I get your point, but the reason why I think it's a true statement is just because I'm not going to give up hope on the Celtics until they're down 3-0. So then, you know what I'm saying? So I already am picking the Celtics to win, but part of that equation would be they have to win tomorrow.
Good point. Now, this isn't very nice. Text line says, your voice for the meth head raccoon should be Perk.
No.
Let's see. A lot of good ones came in on the meth head raccoon.
Or Deuce Bigelow also.
Oh, Deuce Bigelow absolutely should be in there.
Or the Double Deuce. Now, that's not a person, that's a place.
No.
But the Double Deuce
counts.
We
didn't necessarily specify, did we? No, we did not. We just said Mount Rushmore of Deuces.
Updated. Tatum. Yeah. Kids off the list. Deuce McAllister, Deuce Staley, Deuce Bigelow, and the Double Deuce. I think that's pretty fair.
I think I'd have Deuce McBride on there.
No. Well, let's see how he does. If Perk's right and he has a monster game this next couple of games,
AC Deucey, you ever play that? That's a card game I played in my life. Couldn't tell you how to play it.
I had no
idea. But I have played it.
Yeah, I'm aware of it.
Yeah.
I'm aware of its existence.
Okay. Jeff Goldblum was a suggestion for the meth raccoon.
He'd be good.
That would be a good one.
You could double down, have Bradley Cooper, who's the voice of Rocket Raccoon, and then he'd be sort of typecast as the raccoon voices.
Gotcha. Yeah, he's got to be careful with that, though.
Andy Serkis might be pretty good.
Well, if you're going to... Andy Serkis could play him.
You could play him in.
You mocap him. Andy Serkis, famous for the mocaps.
Somebody kind of went your way, Keith, where you go super dignified, Sir David Attenborough.
So that's hilarious.
That'd be a good one.
I think that's the way... I think that's the most comedy is actually with that.
The guy loves wildlife. I mean, the guy loves wildlife.
He knows everything about raccoons,
seriously,
probably.
He could identify the meth raccoon if it was a male or a female like that.
Immediately.
Yeah, like,
so,
right away,
the rings on the tail. Like, is that what it is? I think it's a little lower than that.
Somebody also suggested for best TV mom. This had to have been tongue-in-cheek. They said the mother from Home Alone. Why am I blanking on the actress's name? Catherine O'Hara. Okay.
No, there's no way. You could argue the worst mom.
Maybe the worst mother in the history of...
Maybe that was the joke.
That's what I'm saying. Was that tongue-in-cheek?
Joke? Yeah, the worst mom.
I mean, there couldn't be a worse mom than her. You lose your child once, I get it.
Twice?
Yeah, the second time. Actually, there was a third movie that I never saw.
In New York, for God's sakes?
Yeah, yeah.
State needs to get involved at some point.
Yeah, take the kid away.
Well, and plus...
That's the fourth movie. Just him going through the system. Like, oh, jeez.
Home Alone. Why are you home alone? My parents are in prison.
Well, they just left me multiple times when I was very young.
My parents have been arrested. They left me. I'm now being raised by my older siblings.
Mm-hmm.
It's a darker, grittier Home Alone.
Different kind.
I didn't get that far.
Straight to DVD.
But yeah, maybe the worst mother in the history of mothering.
Yeah. Different list.
Is what she was. Okay, so the series isn't over, though?
No.
I don't think
so. Sorry,
either.
Perk. Disagree.
Sorry, Perk. I do think the
Celtics... Certainly don't think it's a sweep. You don't need to go that far.
I do think the Celtics get a game. I understand it, though. You're in the midst of a take. Sometimes at the end, it just gets away from you a little bit.
Already committed.
You're trying to punctuate it somehow, and it just gets a little
away. They're not going to win a game.
I've been there. What are you going to do? 617-779-7937. We have the Week in Review at 1245. Mike Vrabel talking live from Foxborough. You'll hear it here on Jones and Keefe Live. At 1:30, don't miss it. And on the way next, we'll keep talking Celtics. Former Providence head coach Tim Welsh, who I think also has some good Belichick intel that maybe we'll have to ask him about. All that comes your way. High noon next.
WEEI Afternoons, that's Kristaps Porzingis trying to convince himself and the world that the pressure is off the Celtics. But he's wrong because, as he alluded to, they are expected to win. This segment of WEEI Afternoons is brought to you by Jeffrey Glassman Injury Lawyers, Boston's go-to injury attorney for over 30 years. If you've been hurt in a car or work accident, you gotta get Glassman. Call sevens. That's all sevens. 617-777-7777. We are talking about that embarrassing performance by pretty much everybody who had either a jersey on or a Celtics logo on their warm-up or whatever they wear on the sidelines. I will say, real quick here, I did think the crowd showed up earlier and was trying to do their part.
They listened to you, bud. I think they did.
Yeah. Or just got used to a little bit earlier start time. So I'm going to remove the crowd criticism from the equation. But everybody else, you weren't good enough. You didn't do your job well enough. And I do believe the pressure is on because I do believe, Kristaps Porzingis, this is a must-win game on Saturday. Or this will be an embarrassing effort. And I don't care about all those numbers from Terp about six straight NBA champions. You're built for this. You're built different. You're in the prime. You got the stars. You're supposed to go on a run here. We will be talking about this among some of the great failures in Boston sports history, whether it's the Bruins a couple years ago coming off the record-setting numbers, some of the Patriots coming up short maybe in 2007. This will be a historic collapse, but we're not there yet, so we're just talking about two losses here. Let's go back to the phone line, 617-779-7937. Let's go to Leo in Ipswich. What are your thoughts on what the Celtics are doing or not doing right now, Leo?
it kind of crystallized a lot of things this series, because they've got all this talent, but the problem is their most talented players are not the heady players. They're not the ones that know, have the nuance of the game that Derek White does, Drew Holiday does, and maybe even Pritchett. But you get the other guys, they've been the best all their lives, and they don't have the head for anticipation and thinking about outside the box, you know, being in the right place, heading under the basket to grab a quick rebound because this is the angle of the ball, or, you know, pass the ball in and then jump in and get self in position. They just don't do it. They almost got too much talent that they didn't get the nuance of the game.
All right, thanks for the call, Leo. I don't know, because I don't know what to think about when it comes to Jason Tatum, because all I hear from Doris Burke and national writers are how smart he is, how much he knows basketball. I even thought early in this game he was playing a different style. Now, I actually thought that was bad, Ted, and I don't know how you felt about this. I thought Jason Tatum heard the noise and played like he had heard the noise and was passing and was not shooting as much. I think he has rabbit ears, and I think he wants to be so good and so adored by the basketball world that he ebbs and flows. But I also think he's supposed to be a heady player. He's supposed to be a smart player, and that just isn't leading to the execution in these most important of games.
And that's exactly right. It's like, you know, I think he's gotten a lot better at kind of breaking down double teams. I think he used to not be very good at that. So I think he's smartened up with that. But, you know, there's also situational basketball. And Andy, you and I have kind of harped on this going back way back when we thought was the turning point, you know, where they stopped being just an average team back in early, I think, February, and they started turning around. It's because Jason Tatum didn't recognize the 2-for-1 opportunity he had in that game, and that's when Missoula got all over him before halftime, and then they came out and went gangbusters. Like, it's almost like situationally at the end of games, this isn't a smart team. It's not a smart coaching staff, and it's not the players don't. I mean, the players, Jason Tatum, it was like he didn't know what to do. At the end of this game, to not get a shot off with all the time. I think they got the rebound with 17 seconds left, and you're like, holy crap, they're not calling a timeout. Didn't we all have that feeling of felt this before? Okay, here we go. What happens? And Tatum doesn't get the shot off. So it's on both entities, both coaching and players. But situationally, our basketball IQ is not as high as it needs to be, Fitzy.
Yeah, here's the thing I don't understand. He's not a second-year player. He's 8 years into the league. He is now the world champion, and the what they're going to say now edict of last postseason is about to sour and be a really bad take that could potentially get thrown back in his face, Andy, if he doesn't turn it around. But I just don't understand why. No, I don't think anybody can, and we don't necessarily expect this to turn into a referendum on Jason Tatum, but if you're the man, you're the highest paid player in the league. If you're the leader, if you're the champ, and you want to be the face of the league, then you want to call down the thunder. Well, now you got it. Mm-hmm. I don't understand why there's no consistency to the game. Why is he asleep? You guys don't see all the things he does. Great, awesome rebounds. Oh, a couple cool assists. That's great. You have to be the best player in the court. There is no excuse. You have to facilitate other people being great, or you need to be the greatest one. And last night, he did neither, and the same was true two nights prior.
And this is absolutely a referendum on his legacy and who he is and the type of player he is, in part because he asks for that. If he was quiet, never said a word, never brought him his stature up or any of that, it might be different.
And you see him in every other commercial. I mean, every commercial now has got Tatum in it.
Right. He wants to be the man, except he isn't the man. He's not him. And this he's falling flat on his face specifically in this series. So this is absolutely a referendum on him. And now I saw it was actually, I think, on First Take this morning. Is this a referendum, or maybe they used a different word, on Tatum and Brown? And, you know, I'm a bit of a defender. Do I think it's a little bit of a referendum on the pair? Yes, but Jaylen Brown has deferred. I think he's allowed Tatum to be the superstar here and been whatever he is considered after that. So the most, you know, respected or best player, yes, absolutely gets the criticism when your team sucks, when your team falls apart, when you look lost. And I feel bad for Tatum because I'm going to bitch about the final play, and it's him with the ball and it's him with the pass. That's on Mazzulla. So for Tatum to get it and be like, oh, so I just got to do this? We don't have like a game plan here? We don't have it. It's like razzle-dazzle time in football where you expect the fastest kid on the field to just beat the other 11.
Can we just flesh that out a little bit? Like, do we know for sure? Like, I know that's what Mazzulla said, but like, it looked more like just backyard basketball. Did they look over and see Mazzulla signal in, okay, this is the play we're running? I didn't, and if they did, like, part of me just doesn't want to excuse Tatum in that situation. Part of me just wants to feel like if that's your version of you know, pick a basketball, you suck at it. But if it was a set call, I mean, okay, you know, then I put more on Joe. But I don't know. How did you guys see that part?
I put it on Joe. I think you've got to call a timeout there. I actually think, you know, we talk a lot about Bill Belichick's ego, right? And all these coaches have egos. I think most coaches want to call the timeout there to drop the play, to show their acumen, to show their basketball IQ, to free up their guy. I mean, Tibbs did it the other night when they had that run to the basket for Jalen Brunson. It was like the fake screen. Now, if it had gone in, it would have been even better. But, you know, like, as a coach, isn't that your opportunity to really put your stamp on the game, to show what you're made of? Like, that, I think Joe Mazzulla and his staff should have wanted to call a timeout there, if anything, to kind of show their own greatness, to inject themselves into the game.
That's how he operates. It's so infuriating. It's the whole, like, oh, he's the most, he wants to be, that's why I call him Montessori Mazzulla. He wants to be the hands-off coach that just lets them learn on their own. Great.
Okay,
well,
so go somewhere else then. I don't want that anymore.
Believe me.
I want hands-on.
I'm far from the biggest Joe Mazzulla fan in town. I've taken plenty of guff for it. I'll continue to do so. And if they storm back, win four, and make way to banner number 19, rub it in my face, I don't care. Last night I had some knucklehead on Twitter right back when I clapped out aloud about Mazzulla taking the time, not taking the timeout and going home with one. Somebody was like, oh, yeah. What about Belichick not calling a timeout in Super Bowl 49? To which it's such a stupid comparison because they had all of the intel and advanced scouting that said based on the personnel the Seahawks were sending in, they thought they were going to run a pass play. Guess what? They were right. Mazzulla thought, oh, I can just run back the same play I just ran 20 seconds ago against one of the better defensive head coaches in the league. That was so green, just like it was, just like Hakimich came back to bite him in the ass because they brought in Anunoby, and then the Knicks are in the bonus, and now you've got really good shooters and not some, you know, Claude on the court who can't make a free throw.
And I wonder, guys, if that's like, if that's Mazzulla saying that they just wanted to do the same play that they ran, you know, just before that. It's his way of just kind of saying, it's because I don't know how to draw a good inbound play. I mean, seriously, like, and the thing is you needed 2 points to win the game, not three.
Yep,
so you didn't have to get a shot behind the 3 point. There's so many creative things you could come up with to get a guy open for a open 2 point shot. And it's almost as if they're like, nope, don't want to do it. Don't want to expose, you know, and not come up with a bad inbound play. I don't want people to like see my, you know, my coaching acumen. It just that was my buy. Some would argue, well, you didn't call a timeout because you got the players you want on the court and the matchups you want. Really? Okay. You know, you're giving them way too much credit if you think that that's what they were doing in that moment.
Points.
Let's squeeze in another phone call here. 617-779-7937. Let's go to Bob in Londonderry. Bob, what were your reactions to that loss for the Celtics last night?
Well, I enjoyed the show, and today it's been the big talk of everything. But, you know, from the beginning, I've been on the other side of the coin, meaning look at last night. I've never seen such a lackluster, soft effort. I'm the only one today, and I finally get the call. What was this through the beginning to the end of the game of the Celtics constantly laying on the floor and getting knocked over. And, you know, I hear the morning show and other people talk about the 86 Celtics. You realize if you hit Kevin McHale in the head with a hammer, he'd take it off you and he'd put it where you wouldn't want it. These guys, what a bunch of, they're laying down. What an embarrassing. And I'm not saying it's 100% over, but just remember, it's easy to say this, but I told you people 4+ years ago, after the Bruins debacle, I said, reality, you're not going to see the Patriots again do what you've seen. You're not going to see the Red Sox, the Bruins, or the Celtics.
All right, thanks for the call, Bob. I mean, they won the title last year, so I'm not taking victory laps for something you said they were done 4 years ago when they literally won the title last year. But the toughness, the hit them in a hammer and they might fall over versus hit them in the hammer and they may take the hammer and beat you with your own hammer kind of mentality.
Yeah.
And the comparison is apt because stupid or not, dumb or not, fair or not, right or not, beginning in the year, we were talking about, could this be one of the greatest Celtics teams ever? Could they set records? Could they, I mean, they obviously are trying to do something that hasn't been done since Bill Russell's Celtics, and that's defend a title for the Boston Celtics. So I think those comparisons to Larry Bird, Kevin McHale, these all-time great teams are fair right now, and they are really failing to measure up in that area. 617-779-7937. Taking you up to the top of the hour, it's going to be an entertaining Christian Arcan show tonight. I know that, because if you think we have energy and reactions, just magnify that, and that's what Arcan does, even without the fruit that is these ugly losses for the Boston Celtics. So we'll finish out WEEI Afternoons with Odds and Ends, which just means lightning round. We'll get to as many of your calls and opinions as we can up next here on WEEI Afternoons.